would actually argue that fintech is still really very much at the heart of the UK's strength, both in financial services and technology. We do want to hold social media and social media platforms accountable for the fraud and the resulting financial and emotional harm. When we look at regulating any type of new technology, it's really important that we don't just put it in a box of how we used to regulate old technology.
From the first-time founders to the funds that back them, innovation needs different. Our episode partner, HSBC Innovation Banking, is proud to accelerate growth for tech and life science businesses, creating meaningful connections and opening up a world of opportunity for entrepreneurs and investors alike. Discover more at www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. Hello and welcome to the UKTN podcast, a weekly chat with the movers and shakers of the UK tech industry and the destination for all things UK tech related. I'm your host, Jane Wakefield, and this week I'm joined by Janine Hurt, the CEO of Innovate Finance, the industry body representing the UK's fintech sector. Welcome, Janine.
Hi, Jane. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start off by just getting an explanation from you about exactly what it is that Innovate Finance does.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned we are the industry body for UK fintech. Essentially, we represent the next generation of technology-led innovators to create that more inclusive, more democratic, more effective financial services sector that really works better for everyone. We are a membership association. We're a not-for-profit organization as well. And we convene the entire fintech ecosystem. And by that, I mean, we have a number of early stage companies across all fintech verticals, from your more traditional plays like P2P, FX transfer, through to artificial intelligence, cyber, reg tech, and everything in between. But we also bring the likes of your high growth companies such as Zilch, Klarna, Revolut, Wise, Stripe to the table. And we also have the large incumbent financial services firms that are interested in innovating. And we have a number of the large tech firms as well, and a number of the professional services firms that help us to drive thought leadership across the space too.
That's a lot of things to be responsible for. Yeah, so fintech, it feels to me anyway that fintech was once, you know, a really leading light in the UK tech scene, something that everybody was really proud of. And I'm not saying that's disappeared, but Brexit, the economic downturn, and things like other sectors, climate tech, for instance, kind of rising, maybe taken a little bit of the shine off it. So, I mean, would you agree with that statement to start with? And what do you see as being its kind of longer term outlook?
Yeah, I would actually, Jane, disagree, because I really believe that, just for the sake of that, but I also really believe that at the end of the day, fintech is very much the jewel in the UK's tech crown. We received last year in 2023, despite it being a pretty difficult economic year for all businesses, we saw more than 5.1 billion US dollars coming into UK fintech. That remains second in the world behind only the United States, and it's actually ahead of the next 27 European countries combined behind us. So we are really a global leader. We have more unicorns than all of Europe. The majority of those are within the fintech landscape as well. And we continue to push ahead as an absolute international leader within financial technology and financial innovation. So I would actually argue that fintech is still really very much at the heart of the UK's strength, both in financial services and technology.
Okay, I'll give you that. The numbers do sound very impressive. What is it then? That makes the UK such a good place for this stuff. You know, why is it that we've excelled in this area so much?
It's a great question, and I always like to point to a couple different factors. So I think one of the most interesting components, and where we really took a lead over the past decade or so, has been the fact that the UK has historically always had some of the most proactive regulation in the world. That is when you look back in 2016 with the launch of the regulatory sandbox with the FCA. But generally, the approach towards innovation has been, and new technology has been, quite proactive when we look at regulation. Now, I will say that that proactivity is something we need to continue going forward. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But that proactive regulation is key. We also are a financial services global leader. We are a talent hub. So we have both an incredible domestic pipeline of talent here in the UK, but international access to that talent as well. And we have some of the strongest universities around the world based here. So there's a natural feeding ground for talent that comes into the sector. And I would also add, we have incredible engagement with different hubs from around the world, be that the United States, the Middle East, or Asia. We are a central point, and we are able to really tap into some of those international relations to develop that great fintech spirit. And probably most importantly, we have an incredible, incredible group of entrepreneurs based here in the UK. And that is both from the UK and from all over the world that choose the UK to be their destination of choice.
So you mentioned regulation. Let's talk about politics for a minute. As this is being recorded, we haven't hit the budget. Is there anything that you would like to specifically see in that in relation to fintech?
I think there's a lot of speculation about what the spring budget will look like, especially as we are set to have an election this year. At Innovate Finance, we think that the spring budget is actually a great opportunity for the government to set out its continued commitment to making sure the UK remains the global leader in fintech. We recently submitted our spring budget submission, and there are a few key points that we highlighted that we are hoping to see in the budget announcement. The first is that we would like to see a maintenance around a challenger bank first mindset. So making sure that we have a commitment from the Chancellor to back reforms to strengthen competition and to ensure a more level playing field for challenger banks in regulatory requirements. The second focus is on digital assets, and we have been calling for HMT ultimately to set out in one place a cross-regulatory picture of how the UK plans to approach crypto asset regulation. And we want this to be an ambitious plan because we think there's a real opportunity for the UK to build on its strength in this area and maintain a global leadership. The third area is around tackling fraud. And this has a couple different components, but ultimately we do want to hold social media and social media platforms accountable for the fraud and the resulting financial and emotional harm to UK consumers that has been caused by their platforms. So we know, as an example, that 77% of all app fraud, so authorized push payment fraud, is coming from these platforms, and 60% of that comes from Meta alone. So we have to hold these platforms to account and make sure that we stop fraud at its source. And then the fourth area that we are asking for is movement and momentum around open banking through to open finance and then through to smart data. This has been an area that the UK has historically taken a lead in when we look back at open banking, but we really risk falling behind right now as other countries around the world are surging forward in their progress around this space. So just ensuring that we've got pace and ambition when it comes to regulation around this space. And also we are asking for public sector adoption of open banking payments as well.
That's a lot of different requirements. Let's break down a couple of those. And you obviously mentioned crypto there. Fintech, rightly or wrongly, for many is sort of very much associated with crypto. And a few years ago, the government outlined a quite ambitious plan to make the UK a global crypto asset hub, including the Royal Mint creating an NFT, a plan that was later dropped. NFTs, we could probably talk for half an hour about.
Yeah.
about them and perhaps the red herring that they were for the rest of fintech. But what did you think of those plans that the government came up with a few years ago? Where do you think we are with them? And it's hard, isn't it? Government often seems to be jumping on bandwagons, and sometimes it picks the wrong one when it comes to tech.
Yeah, it's a really great question. And ultimately, we tend to think of the relationship between fintech and crypto, I would say more in a broader sense. So looking at the role of digital assets in terms of the future of financial services, and that's where we spend a lot of our time and a lot of our focus. On the HMT point, we have consistently at Innovate Finance always advocated for a very clear and a long-term roadmap for how the UK is approaching crypto and digital assets more broadly, because this is ultimately the clarity and really the consistency is necessary if we are going to take a leadership when it comes to digital assets, which is very much the future of financial services. So I know that at the moment, we are still looking forward and wanting to see some of that clarity come out. We were really pleased to see some of the announcements towards the end of last year in terms of approaching crypto assets. But we definitely think that the regulator in particular needs to be moving at pace when we look at wider policy proposals to regulate the sector. And ultimately, if we're not the ones doing that, we are going to see other regions jumping ahead of us in this arena.
And already have, actually.
Already have.
So do you think that, I mean, you mentioned as well that we're in an election year.
Yeah.
If we see a change of government, what do you make, say, of Labour's financial services report? And do you think it will have the bravery that you kind of set, hint is needed to sort of take on the crypto question?
Yeah. So we are really positive on the support, both from the current government, but also from the opposition in terms of recognizing the role that fintech plays, both around the UK's global leadership in financial services, but also the role of fintech in creating a better financial services for the end consumer. And we've seen that come out with Labour's recent review as well, where they acknowledge that fintech really is the future of financial services. They've also taken on a lot of our recommendations that we put through in our manifesto, and we were really pleased to see quite a number of those taken up. There's various areas where we talked and asked for things like a national anti-scam center that was taken up. They have set out a roadmap for open banking and what we need to do as both industry, government, and regulators to really make sure that we are taking a global leadership in that space. And then we've also seen, and we're really pleased to see, a focus on increasing access to financial literacy in both schools and universities and colleges, as we think this is core to developing the talent pool and also an educated group of consumers down the road. So all of those areas have been quite positive, and they reflect a lot of the asks that we've made in our overarching manifesto. And we've worked very closely, I should add, with the Shadow Treasury team across a number of these issues, including things like regulating buy now, pay later, which they understand the importance of doing. And they also understand the importance of ensuring that government, regulators, and industry work together when we address areas like how do we regulate new technologies such as AI.
HSBC Innovation Banking, our partner for this episode, provides commercial banking services, expertise, and insights to the technology, life science and healthcare, private equity, and venture capital industries. To find out why innovation needs different, go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. On AI, I mean, what is it that you see as being the sort of key things the government needs to think about there in relation to fintech?
So I think we need to get the balance right. And when we look at regulating any type of new technology, it's really important that we don't just put it in a box of how we used to regulate old technology or old areas. We need to address it in a new way, but we also need to find the balance between supporting innovation and then protecting the consumer, because there is a right balance to be found. And we don't want to stifle innovation, because at the end of the day, consumers are benefiting from these new products and these new services that innovation and new technology are creating. So it's about making sure that you have that collaboration and that education happening between industry, government, and regulators to ensure that we are regulating in the best way possible. And I keep coming back to that triangle, but ultimately I think that's really the core if we're going to ensure that the UK maintains its leadership.
Now, last question on regulation, and then we'll move on. The buy now, pay later regulation.
Yeah.
Be interesting to get your take on where that is. Obviously, there's great benefits in being able to sort of break up the way you pay things, especially in the current climate where, you know, cost of living is meaning a lot of people don't have the money they need. But there are also, alongside that, concerns that it's going to mean that the people using it, which is often young people, are putting themselves at risk of unforeseen debt.
Yeah, I think there is perhaps a misconception that the sector does not want to be regulated, because actually all of our buy now, pay later members, or those that are within that space, are fully in favor of proportionate regulation and a regulation that both protects the consumers and also protects the sector at the end of the day from bad actors. Now, I know that HMT remains committed to regulating the sector. I think we are still waiting on timelines and on certain decisions related to that type of regulation. And from what I understand, HMT is actually still reviewing some of the consultation responses that came in last year. So what we're trying to do as an industry body is work with our members, trying to provide some suggested changes to HMT's proposal, the outcomes of what these changes might look like, and then areas where bespoke rules are needed for the sector, both, again, to protect the consumer, but also stop bad actors coming in and make sure that the sector is able to thrive as well. So we do think that we really need to be moving forward in this space, because there are consumers that need a regulated buy now, pay later, and people are using this new type of product, they're using this technology. So the quicker we can get to that point, the better on all fronts.
And do you think that, you know, the problem here is just that no matter the type of regulation, that there's just something essentially wrong in the idea that you tie this kind of payment into things like, you know, clothes shops, and it's just very tempting, isn't it, for young people if they see that option. Oh, I really want this stuff. I'm thinking of my own teenage daughter right now. I really want this stuff. Here's an easy way that I can do it. I can use Klarna or one of these other systems that allows me to pay later. So is there, all the regulation in the world isn't going to change that fundamental issue, which is it's enticing people to do something that perhaps isn't the wisest way for them to manage their money.
So I would argue actually on the opposite side of that as well, because there are also cases where you find, for example, people that are in dire straits or in a cost of living crisis, where actually buy now, pay later has really supported them in getting through some difficult periods. And where regulation can come into play is to essentially protect those from using it in a negative way and use it in a positive way. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to really showcase how technology, whether it's buy now, pay later or other types of products and services, are having a positive impact, because there are so many instances and so many cases of this. And actually, we did a report that came out in Q1 of last year that showcased how fintech is playing a role in helping consumers through the cost of living crisis. Buy now, pay later is one area within that, but there are a lot of other areas where we're seeing these new technologies, new products, and new companies support both individuals and SMEs through a pretty challenging economic period.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit then about scams. Talk to me a little bit about what you see as being the problem, because I've got a little problem going on myself that I'm going to share with you in a second. But first of all, talk to me about the sort of what you see as being the wider problem and what we do to overcome it.
Yes, I think one of the biggest issues at the moment is that we are forcing banks to cover the cost around authorized push payment fraud, when in reality, we need to be targeting the source. So as I mentioned earlier, we know that 77% of app fraud is originating on social media platforms, 60% just on Meta alone. But they are not at the moment being looked at as where we can stop the fraud. So a redirection and a refocus on what we need to do in terms of stopping the fraud at its source is absolutely critical.
It's interesting. So the issue that I have is a slightly niche one, which is that my name has appeared on lots and lots of stories promoting a particular type of crypto. These stories are in a BBC template. I used to work at the BBC. They have my byline on them. And, you know, they don't convince me, but I can see how they would convince a lot of people. You know, here's a bona fide news organization and a journalist that we've trusted in the past who's telling us to buy into crypto. I know that's not the problem you're discussing, but that's just like one element of it. And of course, these appearing on social media.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really important, first of all, a horrible scenario to be in. And there is a bill, the new Online Safety Act, which Ofcom is consulting on at the moment. And we are hoping that this bill will help to reduce the amount of scam content online in order to both protect individuals that are going through something like what you've just mentioned, or other areas, to ensure that they're only seeing really authentic advertisements as well.
Yeah, a lot of work to still be done on that. And it's we shall see how well they manage to crack down on it. Now, you mentioned earlier on open banking. Explain to me a little bit what that is, and particularly what you want to be done to make it more open.
So open banking is essentially allowing users to be able to, with their consent, share data into third-party providers to access different types of tools, different type of solutions. And the UK has historically been a leader when it comes to open banking. But we are slowing down, and that is primarily due to a slowdown in terms of regulation, but also needing to take momentum to move through from open banking through to open finance and then through to open data. And something we call for in our manifesto is that the UK, on a visionary basis, should be able to be the world's first smart data economy. But that means we need to have a roadmap that shows the progression from open banking through to smart data. That means we need to have a clear and outlined regulatory framework. We need to see how we can share the data in a safe way and allow consumers to do so. But it also means we need to look at things like, how do we expand open banking just from banking through to things like insurance or to other areas beyond just having an account. So looking at how we can progress that forward and expand that out for the benefit of consumers is another core area that we think has a lot of opportunity for the UK and for the benefit of the end buyer.
Consumers might be a little bit worried about the idea of open data when it comes to banking. It's something that people are traditionally quite scared about, isn't it? Older people very scared about even banking using their phone. So there's a kind of a cultural hurdle to overcome there, as well as one to do with sort of regulation and vision.
I agree. And I think you've really hit the nail on the head. There's a cultural barrier, but I would also say there's an educational barrier as well, because what open banking at its core is designed to do is to enable individuals to actually own their data and decide what happens with that data. So rather than the bank owning the data, the individual can say, I want to share this data that the bank has on me with other providers so that I can access tools that are helpful for my personal financial services journey. And so it is going to require a very important component around education, around building trust. Much of that will also revolve around government support, which we have seen over the past few years, and we want to continue to see to build that type of trust and understanding. And it is with older consumers. I would say it's actually with all consumers that we need to have that education and that trust in place. And we are seeing increasing numbers of individuals use open banking, but there is a real opportunity too.
Now, we talk quite a lot in this program about the need for technology not just to be seen as London-centric. So talk me through what's going on in terms of fintech, particularly in the regions of the UK. Because that's something that you do associate with London, you know, banking, finance.
Yeah, and it's another great question, because I think a lot of the attention is placed on London. There is a reason for that. So we've, over the years, the last decade or so, more than around 80% every year of investment is going into London. And some years that has been more than 90%. So there is a central focus hub. But the innovations in fintech are happening all over the United Kingdom. And we're seeing incredible hubs sprout up across the country. So be that in regions like Leeds or Manchester, or even looking at Wales, there's huge hubs in Scotland, Northern Ireland, another great hub as well, where a lot of these are tied to universities and some great graduates coming out and creating new products and new services because they see a niche in the market. But a lot of these companies are being launched also by seasoned professionals from financial services who, again, have seen something missing that they can come to create. And that type of innovation is happening across the entire United Kingdom. So it is really important that we focus on that. Innovate Finance is the secretariat for something called the FinTech National Network, which combines and brings together a number of the FinTech national hubs to really look at how we can shine a better spotlight on those great innovative companies that are all over the country as well.
I mean, you've talked a lot about the work that Innovate Finance is doing. I guess my final question would be, you know, what's in the future for you guys? What's next? Yeah. What's the next focus for your attention?
So the UK has been great for the past decade or so in terms of being a global leader in fintech. I think what we need to ensure now going forward is that we don't slip. And that requires a number of components to be addressed. So firstly, we need to make sure that we are continuing to have growth capital coming into our high growth fintech companies. There was an announcement over the summer called the Mansion House Compact, which looked at how pension funds can start investing into high growth companies. And fintechs will be one of the core recipients of that compact. We played a significant role in that, working very closely with the Lord Mayor Nick Lyons on achieving that compact. And he did some incredible work there. I think we also need to look at the UK as a core listing location for fintechs, and not just UK fintechs. I would argue that the LSE could be a great place for fintechs from all over the world to come and list. But strengthening our institutions there in that space is really core to make sure that we keep the great companies that we drive and that we harness. And I would say it's important we don't forget around our early stage companies, because we've always had a great pipeline of companies here in the UK that then scale and grow and become high growth organizations. We want to make sure we are continuing to have that type of fertile ground for those companies and for those entrepreneurs to want to set up businesses here and continue to scale them.
Fantastic. Well, Janine, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for joining me. But that's all we've got time for on this week's edition of the UKTN podcast. Thank you also, obviously, to everybody who's listening. We will be back with another episode next week. But in the meantime, you can, of course, keep up to date with all the latest UK tech developments at www.uktech.news. Don't forget to follow UKTN on LinkedIn and X, where you can also get in touch with me, at Jane Wakefield, with your comments and suggestions about the show. Until next time, goodbye from me. This podcast is brought to you by HSBC Innovation Banking, the power behind the UK's forward thinkers, future makers, and leap takers. They're helping to ignite the bold ideas that reshape our world. Go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb to find out how innovation needs different.